Here we go. Yeah, welcome back. Cambridge Inside Out, second half of our bi-weekly. Is it bi-weekly or bi-monthly?
Bi-American.
Right.
So, so another thing of some significance that was on the City Council agenda for November 2nd was an item that was made subject to the charter right at the previous meeting of October 26th, namely a proposal, you know, one that has been discussed before in various iterations about municipal campaign finance and limitations on donations. This was really coming from Dennis Carlone, but honestly, really from City of Somerville. And I've no doubt it's Matt McLaughlin. Carlone's aide is the sort of the conduit.
His aide? Wow.
I believe so, yeah. It is a little weird having a Somerville councillor working as an aide. Right. But the thing is that there's, if you go back, you know, I still do those Cambridge candidate pages, and I suppose I'll do them again next year. But the, you know, one of the things that every year, every municipal election year comes up is people advocating for municipal campaign finance. Usually the way it works on the calendar is they start talking about it far too late so that there's a tacit acknowledgement that in fact they won't be able to implement it for the next election.
I don't want to ever see that. I'm sorry. There's 26 candidates. How are you going to determine who gets money? I'm not going to fund some of these people.
Well, that's a set. There's two matters. One that they are not currently discussing, which is the idea of public financing of municipal elections.
I understand that,
And I'm not keen to the idea, though I've always said I'm willing to be convinced.
Of what?
Right?
Financing it?
Yeah, but the thing is, I'm just not there. I'm just not there.
You'd have to do a lot of pre-qualification for me to.
Yeah. And I think another thing, it's a bottom line consideration, at least from my point of view right now, is that even at, you know, even when you go look at not just municipal elections, but state elections, federal elections, money is not the same mother's milk, as Tip O'Neill used to say, of politics as it once was, right? The thing is that internet resources, social media, you still need people to sort of manage it all and make it all happen.
More on a local level, not so much federal, because you've got...
But even on a federal level, it's like the question, is it the big TV buy that's what's convincing voters these days, or is it social media?
Well, when you have $100 million spent on an election, it's an election in Georgia, I think it's whatever. I'm just saying,
Well, the thing is a lot of that is there because, you know, Georgia was viewed as sort of like a flashpoint because of, I think, largely Lindsey Graham.
Oh, God, get rid of
and,
it.
And what happened there then is that all you had to do was ring up potential donors across the country and say, contribute money. And they'd say, sure, just tell me where to send the check. So I think they had more money than they even needed as a result of that.
I mean, I got an appeal from his campaign, Jamie Harrison, after I'd heard he raised 50 cents. I said, really? I said, I support the guy, but I don't think you need more money from me. Sorry, that's enough.
Right. I don't think the money is what's convincing the voters so much anymore. I mean, it's different from years past where, you know, billboards and skywriting and gigantic rallies or whatever.
But a lot of these centers rely on the NRA money. They rely on the big, I mean, I'm just saying we could get rid of that kind of thing, but you're right.
Yeah. But I think I still wonder, you know, I think there are some spectacular examples, and I'm thinking of California in particular, of candidates who had boatloads of money and who lost. You know, and I think I think Obama really, and not just Obama, but Obama's tech savvy people, they completely changed the way politics and the effectiveness of politics.
Tell me that. He changed it in 08.
Really, and much as I dislike him, I'll say even locally, Nadeem Mazin actually showed how you can do that at the local level too. You know, and deserves a lot of credit for doing a very, very credible, effective campaign, you know, at the local level, just using all the tools that are actually available these days.
Well, I think that is the name of the game. You're right. You've got to do that.
So people still talk a lot about money in politics and the sort of the corruptive nature of it. I think it's still a concern primarily when you're talking about somebody who just wants to have an intimidating war chest. Yeah. And if they're taking in big donations from major interests with lobbying, you know, lobbyists, you know, like the NRA, but not exclusively NRA, So that what it does is it actually scares off potential candidates. That to me is the bigger concern. Yeah. It's the gigantic war chest that is so intimidating that people are effectively running unopposed. You know, at the local level, that's just not an, it's just not even a factor.
So what do you think? I mean, there was the original, well, the policy order, which says mainly from developers. And
right. So I thought that was a fundamental error.
Wait, people doing business before the city, which it did not include cannabis, did it? Or
no, it did not. It did not. At least I don't believe it did. So
although if it's people doing business before the city, you'd have to.
That's a little bit different. You know, it's a different metric than what's been used in the past. Usually what has been done, and I've, you know, listen, I put it out there on web pages and whatever, you know, follow the money was the phrase I used in 2019, because I think it's interesting information and let the voters make judgments on their own. If 60% of somebody's campaign finance is derived from people who have business right. before the city, and a voter knows that, a voter might say, I'm not voting for that person.
And it's all public information.
Personally, I'm satisfied with simply getting that information out and then let voters judge on their own.
You know what? You have said this, and I totally agree with you. There all this talk about the money and the two. Why not just have a voluntary cap of like $25,000, which is still a lot of money, and that's it? I mean, and then maybe underneath that, it should be to whatever. But no one is talking about that. No one is saying voluntary. Because then if you see they've raised more than that, well, you know.
You know, I think if we had, you know, if we had a very consistent, widely read public newspaper or other public media that was almost universal.
Cambridge Day. We have other things.
But it's still, the readership is sporadic for all of the above. And I'll say the candidate pages right in the days leading to election are extremely well utilized. Yeah. But the thing is, other than that, if somebody's simply putting out information about campaign finance, people sort of do, some people don't, you know. I wish we could make it a little bit more ever-present and out front so that candidates would feel some obligation to take voluntary pledges.
I think we're getting there.
I think we could get there, but I think we all have to step up our game in terms of getting public.
All right. So what do you think about McGovern's thing about it should be 200 no matter who it is and limit family or, was it Alana Malina, vice mayor, excuse me, that said you can't fund your, no, it wasn't McGovern. You can't fund your own campaign more than.
Okay. So that actually to me was absurd. I think, wouldn't it be nice if you could say that, but if, you know.
Well, which one? The funding your own campaign?
Yeah, sort of, there is no way on God's green earth, especially in the age of Citizens United and others, that where they say money is speech, that you can tell a candidate that you're not allowed to spend your own money.
But you know what?
If you're on your own campaign.
You're getting paid well to be that counselor. I think you can afford it.
You absolutely could. But the point is that just from a legal point of view, I will preemptively tell you what Nancy Glow is going to say on that, which is that you cannot restrict. Okay. You can't do it federally. You cannot do it at the state level. And you certainly can't do it locally say you cannot loan your own money to your own campaign.
Okay. All right. Speaking of that, legally, even if you say they propose this $200 thing, or maybe, does that require state?
Yes.
Okay, so tell me.
I think actually most of this ultimately, there may be some exceptions where you don't have to file a home rule petition to.
So even Carlone's that would require a home rule?
You know, there seemed to be some indication that Somerville did something akin to this, and I don't remember if anybody said they needed home rule legislation in order to be permitted.
But I think the thing that McGovern maybe is proposing would, because that's really restricting anybody's.
Yeah. Well, right? I think that what makes the Somerville one work is basically the prohibition isn't against the candidate receiving the money. It's basically says if you are the person with the business before the city and you make the donation, you ain't going to get the business from the city anymore, right? Is that, I mean, maybe I'm misinterpreting.
Is that what it says?
Well, the thing is that if you go beyond your $200 limit, they actually put something like a 4-year period afterwards too, when wouldn't be able to make those donations. Huh. Yes. I mean, the thing is, if you're talking about entering into contracts with the city, you can put conditions on that. I think that doesn't require state approval to do that. But the thing,
I think that's what car loans would do.
Right. But, yeah. By the way, one point I was going to make about this, which is that, I mean, I'm not a big fan of like big developers, especially out of state developers, dropping boatloads of money and tipping the scales on elections. I don't like the fact that big unions drop in far more than individuals. I don't like it when big developers do it. But I still feel that if somebody is a property developer and they want to make the donation, right? And if it's, and they're doing it because you simply can't make the presumption they're doing it in exchange for favorable legislation, especially if it's somebody who Councillor X has known there ever since they were kids together.
Right.
You know, I mean, I know people who were writing checks to candidates and in some cases took a real snotty attitude that says, you know, oh, I absolutely refuse to take your money, you know, as if somehow you're unclean.
They might take $1,000 from an individual. Yeah. Not real estate. I mean, it's just like, where do you draw the line?
I actually think there was, I mean, in McGovern, it's such a combination of McGovern and Simmons.
Right. McGovern, I think, was a little bit on the defensive because if you look at the charts, he's probably the one that.
Well, he is. He's the one who takes in the most money from the developers.
Not like this huge amount.
Well, he's actually huge. It's huge amounts.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Like a gigantic percentage of his money was coming.
Right.
I think he's changing his ways somewhat. So, and I think he's willing to pledge to not do that so much in the future. But, you know, he just wasn't going to turn it down. But, you know, I didn't publish all the information, but I did keep track of people. For example, the affordable housing overlay was before the city. There were quite a few people who were affiliated with some of those nonprofits who were dropping serious money on some candidates because they wanted, you know, to be able to get those projects. Right. So would they be forbidden from making those donations? Well, if you're going to have a common standard, then the answer is you should.
You mean individuals that supported it? What do you
people say? who were actually worked for some of those developers, nonprofit developers. So yes, did they have business before the city? You bet they did. All right. But somehow that's okay. But if somebody who was associated with Cambridge Crossing, that's not okay. I don't know if I'd go for that.
Well, maybe it
was one very valid point, though, I think has been made, though, which is that, and you can kind of, there's a lot of conversations that are between the lines when you listen to this stuff. Okay, so Dennis Carlone is coming in saying, you know, we want to restrict these evil developers because he's famously takes nothing and he's been consistent and great about that. Yeah. But the thing is, he also lives on Washington Avenue on Avon Hill. And if you're a professional person with a good pedigree, you probably know a lot of people who can drop $1,000 here, $1,000 there.
Darren was kind of saying that, yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, that's really true. If you're Denise Simmons, who's living on Harvard Street, you know, chances are you know fewer of those people, but you might know some of the property developers. So they kind of become, you know, the $1,000 contributors that way.
Yeah.
So I think the logic of what McGovern and Simmons' argument was, and I think it has validity, is that, look, if you're going to say that, you know, evil property developers got business for the city, but you're not going to basically say that somebody, you know, who's sort of born with the silver spoon in their mouth, you know, that they're not having an advantage. If this is about leveling the playing field, then let's really level the playing field. And I think
they're saying the 200.
They just cap it at 200. I don't think that's going to pass muster.
That one, I think, would require.
It would require home rule legislation, but, you know. There was one proposal that was floated. Several councillors said that they wanted to restrict how much money you could loan your campaign. And that just ain't going to happen, you know, you know, so anyway, I thought it's an interesting discussion and, you know, it's going to become sort of a hot topic. Yep. So it didn't end last night, not by a long shot.
What did happen? Did they pass two proposals?
You know, I did sort of down, you know, I marked down a lot of the results of the council meeting and I watched some of it on the videotape, watched some of it live. So yeah, that ordinance has been referred to the ordinance committee. So there'll be further conversation.
before?
Well, at least that one, I believe. Yeah, I did, I'm pretty sure the one that was came from McGovern, it was not yet listed as a city council order, but I believe he moved that that be referred to the ordinance committee as well. So there should be dual conversations.
At the same time, two.
You know, I think the only way to do it is to sort of do it simultaneous, but politics being what it is. I mean, Dennis Carlone is co-chair of ordinance. He voted against referring McGovern's order.
To
the ordinance
committee. Aren't they both on ordinance? Aren't they?
Yes. Yeah. So the thing is that I think one chair, co-chair is going to say, well, you can't proceed with yours unless you're proceeding with mine. And
but
so
it makes sense though to discuss both of them.
Absolutely true. If they're going to come up with Cambridge's version of a municipal campaign finance law, then they have to address it in full.
Against that though, you can't take up one thing at an ordinance meeting.
No, you most certainly can.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
they would have some little technical thing about the rules. If somebody makes a motion, it has to be disposed of before somebody else can make a motion and whatever, you know. That but in terms of what goes in front of the ordinance committee, they can take them up simultaneously, and they should.
So that hasn't been scheduled yet. I mean, there is
no,
but that's not on the agenda.
No, and they're pretty much loaded up for now anyway, so it probably will show up in January or so, conveniently in a municipal election year, and then they're all going to turn it into, you know, fodder for election campaign stuff.
Okay, can we talk about, because another one that confused me was the tear gas one.
Yeah, so that was, I think, from Sabrina Wheeler and one other counselor, maybe.
Charter righted also by Simmons, right?
That's right. And I think a part of the reason that there's the essence of a city council order, and then there's the implication. Yeah. Okay, so there seemed, at least Councillor Simmons suggested, and I kind of agreed with her, that there was an implication that somehow Cambridge is just another bad actor, like you know, cities across the country who are tear gassing their residents.
Yeah.
There was a reference into the order about police tear gassing peaceful protesters, whatever, without making reference to the fact that, but that's someplace else, not here.
Well,
so,
then Sabrina Wheel brought up the 1972.
You know, that, right. So the thing is, so what was happening in Cambridge in 1972, 48 years ago?
Right.
If we were to use the standard that somehow because something happened in Cambridge 48 years ago, that language has to be incorporated into everything that's being proposed today, boy, we'd be nothing but historical researchers.
Well, he just wanted to be sure that people didn't think we never used it. I don't know.
You know, listen, the cops used to use truncheons and nightsticks and all sorts of things once upon a time, but they don't, and it's just not part of it. So to me, it's not particularly relevant, but it is sort of part of the politics and the rhetoric, which has been very prevalent for the last 5-6 months since the George Floyd incident.
Yep.
You know, to basically, you know, it's like marching orders. I'll bet you there are 100 towns and cities across the country who simultaneously were introducing some of these same sort of omnibus or, you know, kind of generic ordinances banning tear gas, forbidding military equipment, you know, you name it, you know. So it's just part of the movement, I think, really. I personally, I don't like orders that are effectively for show and aren't actually effectively changing anything or doing anything or really seriously codifying thing. Yeah. You know, I've never liked them. I don't like foreign affairs related city council orders either, you know, because there's nothing you can do. You know, the city council is not going to depose a dictator in Libya.
No,
you know, yet we certainly passed the city council order calling for doing that.
Yeah, if it's in support, though, of a House or a Senate bill that maybe somebody in Massachusetts...
Yeah, that's different. You know, that's just sort of a you know, a statement of support, you know, from the local level, state level, all the way to the federal. That doesn't bother me.
Speaking of that, you probably have a copy of, remember the nuclear, what was that one? Larry somebody? I mean, he lived...
Larry Weinstein? No, he's with the school committee. I know what you're talking about.
We had a pamphlet.
Well, it's really what created the Peace Commission. It was actually the Committee for Peace and Nuclear Disarmament.
Disarmament, right.
Yeah, and why am I spacing out on the counselor's name at the time? But it's true. It's true.
Well, it wasn't a counselor that wrote it, though, was he?
Yes, it was.
Oh.
Yeah, Yeah, I'm pretty sure, and I again, I'm spacing out on the counselor's name. I should know. He's still around. I think he wrote a book recently or something, but I'm spacing out. But the thing is, so there was a time back in the early 70s where, you know, where campaign literature actually had a big target centered at Cambridge as being like target number one if there was ever a nuclear incident.
Oh yeah,
you know, and that was what was being addressed. I find it interesting, this is kind of a separate matter, but so that's why we have a peace commission. But the peace commission, how much the peace commission's mission today has anything to do with nuclear disarmament? It's like zero.
But there's certainly lots of other things going on.
Right. I mean, I'm generally of the mind that there will always be what I would think of as regulatory boards and commissions, like Board of Zoning Appeals, Conservation Commission, Planning Board, you know, who have, you know, statutory authority, and they are standing committees that must exist. But then there are these other ones, advisory committees, as well as other, you know, kind of issue-oriented committees, which it would be much healthier if they were simply commissioned, you know, as a word, for a period of years.
Okay.
And they would have to then be reauthorized after, let's say, 10 years, 15 years. You know, the thing is, sometimes the mission just isn't there anymore. There was actually an oil recycling committee established that was still on the books. I don't think it was ever officially ended. It just stopped existing, right?
But some of the commissions, though, there's money attached to it. You know,
Right. But the thing is that if you set up something like one of the neighborhood conservation district commissions, where there is some kind of official capacity where they have to make decisions like that, but something like a peace commission, you know, and listen, the head of the executive director police commission is a friend. He's a great person. You know, I'm not digging on the boss. Yeah. You know, I'm just saying is that some of these commissions, maybe have to be rethought periodically, and maybe there are other issues that have come about. You know, like why don't we have a commission on youth? Well, because we do have the kids council, which is right. So maybe I have to take that one back.
Put up the ordinance. You're right. It was called the Cambridge Commission on Nuclear Disarmament and Peace Education.
Yes.
The nuclear disarmament part.
That's right. Yeah.
When it was established, so I was trying to find out the person's name,
but you know what happens is that eventually what happened, at least my recollection, I hope it's
1981. That's right, I remember.
Yeah, but the thing is what happens is eventually that whoever is in charge, basically when the original mission sort of fades away, it becomes sort of a self-perpetuating entity where the current members or the exec direct just decides to repurpose the committee. At that point, you know, if the committee was established by a city council ordinance, you know, but now it's taken on a life of its own to just do what it feels like. There's something a little
We're very generous
about that.
To our employees and our people in this municipality. We pay well, we get good benefits, and it's sort of entrenched. There's a lot of, I don't know.
Yeah. But the thing is, so if we would, maybe what we should do is we make it an exercise for the next municipal election cycle. Like, how would you reinvent some of these citizen entities? Mm-hmm. So, for example, you know, we have a council committee on economic development, but why don't we have a board of commission on economic empowerment that's really kind of going out of its way in order to actually do job creation and job linkages between people who are born and raised here to the job base?
Out of community development, though, don't they have a whole?
All right, so there is a city department that does that, but the thing is that in terms of boards and commissions, do we have anybody who's really lighting a fire under that issue, or is it simply left to a person who's working in some department to just sort of do the right thing, you know? I mean, you know, you could sort of take the point of view that, well, maybe we should disband the Recycling Advisory Committee because, hey, don't you know, we got Michael Orr, he's a good guy, they know what they're doing, so therefore.
The thing is, that's an example of a commit. No one's really being paid there.
But the thing is the only commissioners and board members and commissioners in the city who get a salary, I believe, is the Election Commission. That's it.
No, Right? The Peace Commission, he gets a salary.
Well, he's the executive director, so he's city staff, but I'm saying members are not.
Oh, board, no. Right. But most of these places have an executive director, don't they?
Right, all the boards have some city staff person from some department who's associated with them. Yeah, absolutely true. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I just think we should reinvent this because there are other priorities that are real today that maybe we ought to be refocusing our attention on, maybe I'll make that a question. I'll ask candidates next year. We'll see, Yeah. So anyway, we'll find out here. By the way, there was one, I thought it was kind of a ridiculous thing, but I'm going to make a point about it. So it was one item that was made subject to the charter right or left or tabled the previous meeting, and then they disposed of it. Had to do with a curb cut for Cambridge Brands.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you know, the makers of Tootsie Rolls and Junior Mints, right? In Central Square, Cambridge, right?
But did you see the letter, though?
I did.
Sent to her, and it was sort of...
I know, but the point I'm going to simply make about this is that if you're a company who's doing business in the city, and you're employing people, and you're doing your job well, or whatever...
Around
for decades, is that whether you insult a city councilor inadvertently or not should have no bearing on your ability to get a curb cut.
But even before that... was a charter writer by Simmons.
That's right. Exactly right. You know, I mean, I generally have misgivings about the whole concept of, you know, shaking down anybody who applies for anything. You say, well, you want to get zoning relief here? Well, what are you going to give us?
Well,
I mean, sometimes it's nice if they do it voluntarily, but.
Any of that. But yeah, I agree with you. I just feel like this was the wrong thing to get.
Yeah, and I'm on the Central Square Advisory Committee. Cambridge Brand wasn't really expanding. What they do is they had to do major electrical upgrades, and they had to reconfigure the building to do it. So they're doing a little bit of other minor changes as a result. There's no big expansion going on here. Okay, they should have just been given that approval.
15 seconds left. So.
Yeah, so anyway, so we're winding down here. Right. So
I totally agree with that. I'm all for Tootsie Rolls and all that.
So. Yeah, I'm for Junior Mints, absolutely. So anyway, see you again on Cambridge Inside Out.
Bye.